When you wake up in the morning, are you raring to go? Or do you think to yourself, what could possibly be the point? Doing what works will help you see it isn't too late to go after your dreams. We talk with experts about everything from getting in shape to finding work you love. We're your guide to a better life. Now, here's your host for Doing What Works, Maureen Anderson.
Is there any profession that conjures up more allure and mystique than singer-songwriter? I would have difficulty coming up with one. What does it take to make it in that business? There are probably as many ways as there are musicians, and I cannot wait for you to hear the story of how one woman's doing it. A writer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert describes Elizabeth Tryon thusly. And tangentially, I love the word thusly, but here's what a writer for The Late Show says. If you were to toss a heavenly choir into a blender, puree the singers, and then feed that melodic smoothie into a songbird, you would have the beautiful, wonderful voice of Elizabeth. She was the first musical act chosen to perform at the legendary Carolines on Broadway in New York City in more than 15 years. And she's performed solo at Walter Reed Theater at Lincoln Center. She's also performed solo on PBS Television's That's Classic and has, as they say, both pop and classical chops. She's also gotten a lot of radio play, not counting Doing What Works. It's so much fun to meet you, Elizabeth.
Oh, thank you, Maureen. I'm so thrilled to be on Doing What Works.
Tell us about your new album.
Well, I'm coming out with a new album, and it is a combination, since I started out as a classical singer, actually trained as an opera singer, and so it's a combination of classical and original pop music. So it's kind of similar to like the Moody Blues Days of Future Past album, you know, from their hit was like Nights in White Satin, they had like pop and classical elements in that album. So that's very much, so if you, you know, if you're a fan of pop music, you'll like it. And there's also some classical influence stuff in there. So I'm kind of an artist that, you know, I don't fit like a prescribed category. Since I'm, you know, have an operatic and a pop background. And so I've really been making my way, you know, without much of a roadmap and without fitting a specific category.
Well, I was going to say, it's almost like you're inventing a new genre. And I think the fun part of what you're doing...
Call it popera.
Exactly. There you go.
That's awful.
I'll be quiet.
It sounds like a candy, like Pop Rocks or something. Although that doesn't sound bad. Pop. If I can congratulate myself.
It's a great, I love it.
But
I love it.
You maybe you've heard the expression that if you're going someplace nobody's been before, of course there's no map. That's the fun trip to take.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it is. It's like so much fun. And I think you really find out I think life is like writing a song in a way, because you realize like you don't have much control over things. And so you kind of you start out with an intention of like, okay, I want to write a song about the specific thing, and then, you know, you might have like one chord as, you know, your one idea, and so you just kind of start playing that chord, and you know, you don't know if anything else will ever come to you, but you just kind of get curious and say, well, I wonder what will happen next. And then, you know, you might think of like a little bit of a melodic line, or maybe you think like that I should really go listen to this other video because it kind of reminds me of that, or, you know, so it's kind of amazing how like things will come to you, you know, if you kind of stay curious and let them. And that's kind of the way life is too. You know, it's like we kind of get an idea and we say, I want to do this, but nobody's really doing that. You know, and then there's all this worry about like, well, oh my God, I have to be exactly like Katy Perry or something because she's very successful. You know, and then I think it's kind of exciting because, you know, you say, well, well, wait a minute, we already have a Katy Perry, so I can't do her as well as she can do her. You know, what do I really want to do? And sort of go from there and leave what happens up to, you know, sort of the universe, you know, just to kind of like lean on that support. It's just like when you're writing a song and things come to you in like the weirdest ways, you know, so you might be like just getting in your car and suddenly you hear something on the radio that gives you an idea, and then you have to try to, you know, record it on your phone while you're driving, and you know, and that's not really safe, but
I should probably introduce the person whose voice you heard that wasn't Elizabeth's or mine, Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer, longtime listeners of Doing What Works. I love you very much, by the way. Know him
the
already.
The listeners or me?
The listeners, of course. What am I going to say? I love
Talk
you on the air.
World record inflated ego and then deflated ego in short time.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because the reason I brought you in again was that I should, since I'm so honest about the things that you do that I'm not crazy about, I feel an obligation to tell you that Popra is kind of growing on me.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a really cool. I love it. I love it.
Have you heard it before, Elizabeth?
I've heard it like occasionally, you know, from like a couple of people. But,
okay.
You know, it's a very creative. I love it.
Well, we'll be playing clips of your music as we transition in and out of commercials. But by way of introducing people to it, I'm going to have Daryl pull up an excerpt now.
Live your dreams, nothing's the way it seems, and you know what I mean. You can decide your own destiny.
Okay, this is interesting. I did not listen to this clip on purpose, Elizabeth, before the show. I wanted to share my immediate reaction, and three things come to mind. The first thing I thought was soaring. It just has this soaring feel to it. Second thing is Broadway show, whatever, but not... You know, I don't happen to be a fan of opera, so it doesn't have too much of that opera feel. It almost feels like it's straight out of the movie Enchanted to me. And I mean that in the best possible way.
Thank you. Oh, that's so lovely. I love that.
It's lovely music. When did you know music would be your life?
Oh, gosh. I think when I was like 3.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you remember about being 3? Anything?
Well, I went around the house singing a lot, and my grandmother, who was taking care of me, was kind of like, do you have to, you know, really do that? And I said, and, you know, I was singing loudly, and I said, like, well, someday I'm going to be the singer, and I'm going to be on TV, and she was like, oh, wow, that's great. So that was sort of my beginning.
Did she live to see you on TV?
She did, actually, thankfully.
Oh, good.
Yeah, she saw me on the PBS. Yeah, yeah, so.
I bet that was sweet.
Well, she was very supportive. I mean, after, you know, when I got a little bit older, she was extremely supportive. So she, like, came to everything, and, you know, that was wonderful.
How old were you when you wrote your first song? Do you remember?
I started really writing... I wouldn't call it like full songs, but I started kind of writing stuff when I was like 9. And so I did that. And then, but I didn't really write my first song until I was probably like 22. And I was kind of thinking about, because I went into opera, you know, I started really seriously studying opera. And then it was, when I was like in my really early 20s, I got back into doing pop, and it was sort of like this unexpected thing where I was working with somebody in Idaho, strangely enough. It's a really cool place, Idaho. It looks like the, you know, right out of the Wild West. It's like you could shoot a Wild West movie there, and I guess because it is. and we, it is, you know, I guess it's not wild, but it's the West. And, so it's like this exotic place, and then we needed a song, and the song we were supposed to use wasn't, we weren't able to use it. So at the last minute, I was like, well, I do have this song that I've kind of sort of written, haven't finished it, but you know, I offered it. So it was kind of like this last minute thing of like, I can't be a songwriter. I can't really, you know, show my music to anybody because it's just for me. And so I was kind of forced to, forced to offer.
Let me back up. You were told when you were 9, you had the voice of an opera singer. How did that conversation happen?
Well, that was really surprising because we were in music class and, you know, we were going to be picked for choir. So I guess she had to say whether we should be like an alto or soprano, you know, in the choir. And so the music teacher had us, you know, sing these scales for her. And then when it came to be my turn, I sang the scales and she turned to me and she said, Elizabeth, you're an opera singer. And I was 9 and, you know, I was just like, I'm a what? What am I? And she's like, you're an opera singer. And, it was kind of like, you know, in Harry Potter and the first book, and the guy says, Harry, you're a wizard. And he's like, excuse me? I'm sorry. I think you've got the wrong person. But I'm a what? So it's just weird.
Did you know what opera was when you were 9?
I really barely knew. I had heard of opera, like, literally from Sesame Street when I was, like, a lot younger. They did, like, a little segment on what opera was. Uh-huh. So I kind of knew what it was. But, and I'd heard, like, you know, sometimes you're on television and you're just, like, flipping through channels and you hear, like, a snippet of it or something. So I was like, I don't really, what, you know. And so she wound up taking
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're coming up on what I know is a good story because I did my homework. So I'll let you talk about what happened when you got taken to your first opera when we come back. From a commercial break, we are talking with Elizabeth Tryon today. It is so much fun, and I don't want you to miss any of it. Coming up next, I'm Doing What Works.
A big hello and thanks to all in the Rome, New York area who are listening to Doing What Works today on WKAL-AM.
Welcome back to Doing What Works. One of my favorite movies of all time is Pretty Woman. Not because it's a movie about a prostitute. I don't think it is a movie about a prostitute. I think it's a movie about a man and a woman who are helping each other be the best people they can be. And one of my favorite scenes is when Edward takes the pretty woman to the opera for the first time, and he watches her be so moved and tear up. And I worry a little bit about having told my guest on Doing What Works today, Elizabeth Tryon, the singer-songwriter, that I'm not a fan of opera. Elizabeth, it almost feels like that is something you should apologize for if that's the case.
But being not fans of opera.
Yes, because it seems like such a, like the right thing to be would be an opera fan, you know?
Well, I have to confess that I was not a fan of opera when I first went to see my first opera either at all. And
you were 9 years old, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was actually, technically, I think I had turned 10 at that point. But, you know, still. And I heard it was in a foreign language, and it was just very, it was very loud, and I just thought it was really strange. And I remember telling my voice teacher, my music teacher, that I didn't, you know, I was like, I don't think that I'm really an opera singer. That's really, I just don't think so. So it is something that, you know, we're not, it's really from a different culture, so I think a lot of people, it's not something that we're really used to in this country, you know, and it's not really something that, it's not a form of entertainment that it's not like going to the movies where we just sit down and it's like, oh, that was really entertaining, you know, because opera is really from another time and place, so it's kind of like an acquired thing, I think.
I think if I saw Evita, I would become a fan, because I just love that. I never saw the movie, but I love the soundtrack. Okay, so you're 9, now you're 10, you go to your first opera. And okay, you go through elementary school, middle school, high school. Do you think about college or not for music?
I actually went to like a conservatory for college. I mean, I went to, it's Indiana University, and there's like a school of music attached to it that has like this opera house out in the middle of Indiana.
You're a Hoosier.
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's, you know, the basketball and opera.
Well, it's like you cannot imagine two more dissimilar things in all the world.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, but before I got to college, it was kind of like more when I was when I was a teenager that I heard, you know, I went back to the opera because my music teacher kept like, you know, insisting like you should go back and you should watch more opera and you should listen to this and listen to that. And so I was finally there and somebody was singing, this woman, Natalie Dessay, who's an amazing opera singer. And I heard her and I was just like, I can do that. I can do that. You know, I mean, I was like, yes.
So then what? How did you advance the dream then?
Well, then I started, I started in voice lessons, and I actually, because I lived in outside of New York City, I got to meet my first opera singer, who is an opera singer at the Met, and so that was really exciting, because you kind of meet one, and then it's kind of like Harry Potter again. You know, you find out where Diagon Alley is, you buy your cauldron, so you meet one, and they kind of introduce you to the whole rest of the world, because there's not that many people doing it. So it's kind of easy to get in.
It sounds like things quickly fell into place for you in terms of a path.
Yeah, it did. In terms of doing you know, straight out opera, a path definitely appeared. And I studied it a lot, and I love singing opera. And then I discovered I didn't really like the business of being a full-time opera singer as much.
Okay,
you know, just like the lifestyle.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but before you go on, and in only about a minute, tell us a little bit about the business of being an opera singer, can you?
It's very much you're on the road constantly, and you kind of live one place for 6 weeks or so to put an opera on, and then you go to another place. So you go from Finland to, like, Hawaii to, you know, you're just sort of like this gypsy in a way. And you're just performing, you know, the same, well, if you can, if you're lucky enough to get the same operatic roles. But basically, it's a very, very, very gypsy lifestyle.
And that's what we're doing when we choose a career, isn't it? We're not just choosing a way of making a living. We're choosing a way of being in the world. And it's so important to consider not only the work you're going to be doing, but do you like everything that comes with it? And if you know that you don't feel like you have to stay with it just because you chose it. You don't have to. And we're going to explore that aspect of the music business more with Elizabeth Tryon next on Doing What Works. Picture this. You're told as a child you could be an opera singer. And as you grow up, you realize you do have the chops. And as a grown-up, you meet other opera singers and you find out that they're never not on the road. You decide you don't want that life. Now what? Well, now you keep listening to this hour of Doing What Works. That's what. We have Elizabeth Tryon with us. Her music is beautiful, and we are getting treated to some of that on the show today. If you want to learn more about her work, and I encourage you to do that, go to her website at Elizabeth Tryon, T-R-Y-O-N, just like it sounds, ElizabethTryon.com. So now you're an adult, Elizabeth. You don't want to be an opera singer, but you've had training, and you're facing sort of a crossroads in your career. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So and, what do you do?
Well, one thing which was really interesting is I got this job to sing, you know, the song Weem Away? The very famous.
I hate that one. Doesn't everybody hate that one?
I love that song.
Are you kidding?
I used to sing that song in karaoke, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know you anymore.
Well, that was before you knew me.
You know someone.
Yeah. I can do the falsetto, but I'm not going to do
Please
it today,
don't,
okay?
Yeah. or ever.
And you didn't know this about him.
Okay. No.
Uh-huh. There's a lot you don't know about him.
Is it too late to take him back?
Anyway. But we digress.
We
yes.
Know.
About the lion sleeps tonight is what the song is called. But anyway.
Okay. See, you're this fan. Wow. So, yes, I got this job, and it was the 50th anniversary of the song. And so the original group, they weren't the totally original group, but the group that did it, and became a big hit, the Tokens, were performing this song, and it has an operatic part in it, which most people don't remember, but if I sang it for you, you'd immediately be like, oh yeah.
Go ahead. okay,
it's kind of a background part.
Yep.
Yeah, so... there's more to it, but yeah, basically. And so I'm there, and there, because the original singer who sang it like 50 years ago was like in her 80s and she didn't want to do it. So they got me and I'm there singing and I got to sing, originally I came on, I'm singing like little pop background vocals while they're doing the song. And then I come out with this opera part and, which is in the song, obviously, but people weren't expecting it. So they're dancing to this pop song, and then all of a sudden, I come out singing opera, and they start just cheering and yelling because, it's part of this fun song and everything. And I realized,
I'm sorry to interrupt, Elizabeth, but remind us the venue on this.
Oh, this was actually in Brooklyn, just sort of in the middle of, because it was the 50th anniversary of the song Weem Away, with the original group. It was like, it was on the radio and it was in the middle of Brooklyn, like in this big, it was actually like outside, but on this stage in this big kind of park area, and so I wound up doing that and I realized, it's so much fun. I mean, I had been writing pop songs before this, but it's so much fun when you're singing classical music for people that don't really expect to hear classical music, and they're not really, that's not really what they, are even expecting or thinking of. And I love, the energy of pop music, and I've always been a pop music fan because I was raised listening to pop music. My mom was like, why do you do opera? I raised you on like Madonna. Like, I tried to raise you right. She's like, it's not my, I tried to be a good mother. Because she was always listening to pop stuff on the radio and so I love pop music and I love the inclusiveness of it and that everybody's dancing and everybody's excited. And then when you kind of throw some classical music in, they get even more excited and uplifted and that's what I really want, people's experience to be when they listen to my music, is to feel a sense of feeling uplifted and excited and inspired. And so so my feeling was like, well, what if I, really wrote my pop songs and did kind of a combination where I, wrote pop songs and I also performed some classical music, but in ways that are geared towards people that aren't necessarily, I mean, they might be opera fans or they might not be, it doesn't really matter.
Is it like
what if I kind of combine the two?
Is it like making brownies with a vegetable puree so the kids don't notice?
It kind of is, yeah. It kind of is. But it's like, because classical music, I mean, after all, we have a lot of classical music in movie soundtracks today.
Sure.
And some of the most, people will buy movie soundtracks sometimes, they're some of the most uplifting, beautiful, inspiring music. And of course, it's all classical. I'm talking about soundtracks like for Avatar or for, well, maybe Avatar is not a good example, but there's so many iconic movie soundtracks. So it's kind of like it is very uplifting and entertaining, just in a different packaging, than people than necessarily opera. But it's just packaged a little bit differently, and then people love it. So yeah, so I started with really the main thing that I wanted people to feel uplifted and inspired and excited, and this is something that made me feel uplifted, inspired, and excited. So I was like, well, why don't I do that?
John Williams comes to mind. Some of the music he has done for movie soundtracks.
Remind
really
me.
Good example.
Oh, Jurassic Park, Superman. Some of that kind of stuff.
I haven't watched any of them.
Oddly enough, I was just listening to some of that yesterday.
Really?
While I was working.
Really?
Yeah, the Jurassic Park theme. There's a theme from Superman. Indiana Jones. I don't know if John Williams did Indiana Jones or not. That might have been somebody else.
Yeah, and he did. Didn't he do Jaws too?
Probably. And there was an old TV show that I used to watch when I was a kid called Lost in Space, and he did the theme for that. That's taking us back. Yeah, that was back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
I'll just be over here. Yeah. I should have let you do this. And there is so much about you I don't know. Well, one thing I think would make being in the music business difficult is that it is a business. And how do you balance writing songs and performing music and doing all the things that a lot of us dream of doing and still make the rent? That's what we'll dig into next on Doing What Works.
This could be the most interesting conversation you'll hear all day. Go ahead and eavesdrop. We encourage it at Doing What Works.
The following is sponsored by the Knock 'Em Dead Career Management Books.
We promised in an earlier show that we'd have our good friend, Martin Yate, back to cover the subject of salary negotiation in the job search process. Martin is the New York Times best-selling author of the Knock 'Em Dead Career Books, and he allows that salary negotiation is one of the most critical parts of job interviewing because there's so much riding on it. Martin says that when the interviewer asks, "How much do you want?" you'd better be prepared.
Such a great question, but so difficult to answer. Ask for too much, and their real offer's never going to end up on the table. Ask for too little, they're going to jump at it, and you're going to kick yourself in the butt for the next 3 or 4 years thinking you sold yourself too cheaply, which you probably did. So what's the answer? I believe the answer is to create a salary range for yourself that puts you in the running but doesn't nail you down to a specific figure that you might regret later. Now, all jobs, every single job anyone's ever been hired for, has a carefully approved salary range. So what I'm suggesting is you use the same technique as corporations do. You come up with a salary range for the position. Now, to do this, you need to actually start off with coming up with three numbers. Number one, what's the least you need to put food on your table, go to work, come home, keep a roof over your head? Number two, what would be a fair offer given where you live, your profession, your skills, and the length and depth of your experience? And figure number three, what's the offer that's going to make you drop dead and go to heaven on the spot? Having come up with those three numbers, you kick out the bottom one, you kick out the lowest number. Why? Because it's easier to negotiate downwards than it is to negotiate upwards. And what you're left with is a salary range. Now, the employer has an improved salary range. And when they ask you, how much do you want? Instead of giving one figure that could be too high or too low, you give them a range which dramatically increases the odds of you locking in somewhere into their approved range and getting into a serious salary discussion.
Doing What Works and Martin Yate are offering a special discount to you as a listener of the show on Martin's Knock 'Em Dead products and services. To get the discount, go to martinyate.com and get 20% off anything in the Knock 'Em Dead store. Again, that web address is martinyate.com. Remember the promo code WHATWORKS and get 20% off any Knock 'Em Dead book, resume, or coaching service. Learn to control your destiny.
You picked a good day to listen to Doing What Works, although I would hope that most days are a good
day. Any day is a good day for that. It's a great day.
Doing What Works. The writer Elizabeth Gilbert had what I think is wonderful advice for writers and artists and musicians, though she put it in terms of her own life and therefore has more credibility with me, at least. She never expected her writing to pay the bills. She thought that was unfair to demand of it. She knew she could find other ways to pay the rent, and she wasn't going to put that kind of pressure on her writing. She thought it was a recipe, however she worded it, for one unhappy partnership. You may know Elizabeth Gilbert as the author of Eat, Pray, Love. So obviously that attitude worked out just fine for her. We have another Elizabeth with us today on the show. Her name is Elizabeth Tryon. She's a singer-songwriter, and you can find out more about her work than what you're getting from her today on her website, which is ElizabethTryon.com. It's spelled exactly like it sounds, ElizabethTryon.com. Elizabeth, do you find the business side of music daunting, or have you already kind of got a machine going?
No, I definitely find it daunting. And I love Elizabeth. I never realized she said that. And I think it's amazing because, I have this really successful songwriter, that I spoke to, and, his name's Billy Steinberg, and he wrote like True Colors and I Drove All Night and many, he wrote like A Virgin for Madonna, and he's still writing like all these successful songs, today. So he's just absolutely remarkable person. And he said, well, when I started out, I wasn't earning any money, you know? And he said, I didn't even think about it because I just wanted to do this. And so, yeah, so that was kind of, you know, his thing was like, I mean, obviously he wanted to earn money, but it was like, you got to do it anyway, you know, until you do earn money. And I really liked that because it was that same attitude of like not really putting pressure on himself, just saying, I'm going to do what I'm doing and trust that, you know, things will follow. And I love his advice.
Excuse me for interrupting. Is that why you do acting work and voiceover work?
Yeah, I do voiceovers. Exactly. And I do... I just did another album, actually, which I was fortunate enough to get, where I'm, and this is on my website, where I sing, it's really a classical album, and I sing all the classical vocals to this album. So that was super exciting that I was able to get that. That's from Centaur Records. So that's really very much the classical side. Yeah, so, and I do voiceovers, and strangely enough, I actually... This is really weird, but I do British voiceovers. So
how did that happen?
Yeah. So I've done this for MTV and Oreo and a whole bunch of other companies. But basically, I do a British accent because my teacher, when I was in science class, when I was like a kid, had a British accent, you know, and she talked like that. And so I imitated her, and then it just totally as a fluke, I was with this agent one day, and she was saying that she had this British voiceover opportunity, and she didn't really have anybody who could do it. And I was like, oh, I can do British. So it was just completely, and so she's like, well, they don't want Americans, so when you go, you're going to have to not say you're an American. And so... fortunately, I have kind of like a British-sounding name. So anyway, so I went to it, and I think I booked that one, or I booked one that was really shortly thereafter. And so after that, I've done like a whole bunch of British voiceover, which is...
Can you recite a line or two from a commercial in your British-sounding voice?
Well, like MTV was, sure. You know, find out who's hot and who's not. And, you know, it was like this kind of snotty British, you know, but... so sorry, you're not hot. but I didn't do that. But, you know, but it was all about find out who's hot and who's not. And, you know, and get on Twitter and Vine and Pinterest and follow us. And so I wound up doing that. And so when I do the auditions for that, I have to actually show up and say, you know, hello, I'm here for the audition. And now I've blown my cover. But, you know, but basically it's really strange. And then people, you know, people like Americans start, it's really weird to do an accent that's not your own because people treat you really differently. So people start like sort of imitating me by accident, and they're like, the bathroom is over there. You know, it's just really weird. Or they'll be like, we got you tea because we know that you people really like drinking tea. Guys, it's so weird. Or then they'll start asking me questions. They're like, I'm going to go to the UK, and I was wondering what, and of course, I've only been to the UK on a layover in an airport, so I never, you know. And so I remember this one guy asking me, and I'm sure he was saying some, like, iconic UK thing. You know, he was like, my wife and I are going to go to, and he said this name. And he's like, "And do you know what we should do there, or whatever?" And I'm like, "No, what is it?" And he was like totally taken aback. And he's like, "Oh, I'm sure I pronounced it wrong. Oh, how embarrassing!" And it was like, of course, it was totally on me that I'm sure I should have known. He probably was like saying we're going to Big Ben or something, you know. And I was just like, "What's that?" And he's like, "Oh God, I'm sure I just messed it up. Oh my God."
Oh, you know, first of all, my stomach hurts from laughing.
Must be a very convincing accent.
Well, and, I told my teacher I'm grateful to her for, you know, doing the accent.
We only have about a minute to the next break, Elizabeth. My voice is a little scratchy because I've been laughing so hard. But, you know, when people think of paying the bills with a reliable job, yeah, they don't necessarily think of acting and voiceover work because those are like music. It's hard to get that work. So you have a very unusual, what I call a combo platter career, and you're obviously quite talented. I imagine the rest of us would have a little more trouble pulling off the rent payments.
Well, I don't, it's not all of my income, but that is a huge help. You know, it's obviously unreliable work, but when you do get that work, it's a big help for sure. So I also do editing because it's kind of like the writing is based on, you know, like my songwriting and everything. So I do editing as well.
Well, if the last 45 minutes are any indication, you're going to have a lot of fun in the final few minutes with Elizabeth Tryon next on Doing What Works. It was only fairly recently I heard of someone who was so not into music, she almost fell into the category of not liking music. And I just find that impossible to believe. I'm guessing it's rather unusual. I bet most of us could create quite a soundtrack for our lives. That's what strong feelings certain songs call up as you look back on your life. We have the privilege of having someone who is creating songs for the background of your life. Her name is Elizabeth Tryon. She is a very talented singer-songwriter and also a very talented actress. And as we heard in the last segment, an extremely talented voiceover artist. And I tell you what, if you missed that part of the program, or even if you didn't, you just want to hear it again, go to the podcast in a couple of weeks at MaureenAnderson.com and do not miss Elizabeth Tryon's account of getting a job that required a British accent. It is worth the price of the hour, I'll tell you that. So, Elizabeth, do you have a favorite song of all time?
Oh, wow, that somebody else has written?
Either.
Well, my favorite song of all time is probably Alone by Billy Steinberg, just because, I don't know, I love that song. But I have so many favorites.
Yeah, that's an impossible question.
Yeah, it's hard to find just one that's like the favorite, right? Yeah, because we all do have playlists for everything.
Is living in New York City something musicians do to sharply increase their odds of making it?
That's an interesting question. I think, well, in terms of the opera world, you know, New York City is actually like almost the capital of opera. I think really even edging out Milan as the opera capital. So that definitely does give an edge because you can do, you know, auditions there and audition for agents there too. And I'm not really sure actually. I think now, you know, if you're really just a, you know, mainly a pop singer-songwriter, I think you can live anywhere, you know. I mean, there's definitely the people that you want to represent you are in New York or LA, but as you know, or Nashville, as the case may be. But as long as you, yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's probably is better if you're there, but now people are so, you know, plugged in and online and everything, and so I think it's a lot less necessary than it used to be. But it's still something, you know, you can go to New York and have all these amazing people to collaborate with. That's a huge deal. I think just like the amount of people that are here that are doing music that are just so amazing. That's a real edge.
How did Stephen Colbert's writer find out about you? Do you know?
That was really really random. But I met him bizarrely because I did this whole show at Caroline's on Broadway, which is a major club. And so I met a lot of comedy writers that way because they happened to be at the club, even though my show was not a comedy show. It was, you know, music show. But there were a lot of people there. So you'd think that I would have met him there, but I met him at Jury Duty, in New York. Isn't that ridiculous? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was so excited because I'd met all of these other wonderful comedy writers, and then I wound up going to Jury Duty, and I'm there, and he has to speak up and say what he does as part of the jury selection process, and he says he's this writer for the, you know, and so then I started talking to him, and I wound up sending him several clips of my singing, and so we wound up winding up like really knowing each other from there. And he wrote this wonderful quote for me. And I keep thinking that only in New York City and maybe LA and a few other places would I voluntarily want to go. You know, I think I would just go into the jury room because they don't throw you out. You know, most people don't want to be there anyway, right? And so they're not going to know if you sneak in, right? And so you just, like, sneak in, and you kind of sit there, and you just start talking to people. Yeah, such a pain that we're here, right? So what do you do? And bring, you know, your card and pass it around.
Elizabeth,
everybody has to go.
Heartbroken. We're almost out of time in 20 seconds. What would you most like aspiring musicians of any age to know?
I think that real life is better than your fantasy. That's really true. And so just stay curious and treat it like a game, because it really it is.
Oh, that is great advice, and you showed it during the entire hour. We've had so much fun, and we cannot thank you enough for joining us.
Thank you so much.
ElizabethTryon.com to learn more about her work, and thank you for listening to Doing What Works.
This broadcast is copyrighted by North Shore Productions. To learn more about the show, you're invited to visit MaureenAnderson.com. You can read Maureen's blog, listen to her podcast, or pass along suggestions for the program. I'm Cindy Weir. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next week for more great advice and inspiration on Doing What Works.